Detail TV. I'm your host, Brian Kramer, keynote speaker, coach of coaches, and the author of There's No B2B or B2C. It's H2H, human to human. I'm really excited to be here today talking to Ashley Faust. She is the Senior Director of Marketing and Media for Atlassian. We're going to be talking about some really fascinating things that I know you're just going to love. We're talking first and foremost about why B2B marketers should think less about funnels and more about playgrounds. Think about marketing as a playground and how you can test and try and build. And she discusses the process, the exact process for how to make that work. Then also how Ashley uses her background in performing arts to get into character, how to get into the buyer's mind as an actress. Fascinating the way that she approaches it. I know you're going to get a lot out of that. And finally, how an eclectic background of skill sets in your past make you the best marketer and even the best marketing campaigns. So let's get into it. I want to show you, not tell you exactly what it is that I'm talking about. Let's listen in, and here's my interview with Ashley Faust. Ashley, thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I love the title of the book. It's H2H. That I think this is going to be a good conversation because I 100% agree with that. Like, everybody forgets that it's a human behind the screen. They're not just a buyer or user. So I love that concept of H2H.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're not just a persona.
Yeah.
They're a little bit more than a persona too. Yeah. So that's great. We're going to get along just fine. I know that you recently spoke at HubSpot's Inbound conference. Great conference, huge conference.
Yes.
Tell me about your presentation and your experience there.
Yeah. So I actually first spoke at Inbound last year, talking a little bit about adding live streaming to the B2B marketing mix. Obviously, the B2C marketers have kind of figured that out. They're a little ahead of the curve compared to some of the B2B. But I love that conference because I feel like I found my people. I get to nerd out with other marketers, both the presenters and the attendees, which is great. So it was great to be back again this year. I was talking about, so the title of my session was Beyond the Editorial Calendar, New Rules of Content Strategy. And I introduced this idea of a content playground. So, you know, we have moved on from the linear funnel. We know that humans are weird. They don't just go in this nice, you know, awareness, consideration, purchase. But a lot of people are still using the looping decision journey. So they throw in like a post-purchase or a retention phase at the end, and somehow that recycles you back up to the awareness phase. And it's like, okay, but humans aren't, they don't go in this perfect circle either, right? So I basically introduced this idea that we should actually treat our content and treat the buyer's journey like a playground. So what's the best way to enter the playground? What's the best order to play on the various types of equipment? What's the best piece of equipment? What's the right way to play on the slide or to play on the swings? If you ask the playground designer, they're going to say you're supposed to go down the slide. If you ask my three-year-old nephew, he's going to insist that you're supposed to go up the slide, right? So how do we design our content in a way that allows our consumers to enter, exit, play, explore, go up, go down, and use the content as they see fit, and to really curate a seamless journey, no matter how many touch points they have, no matter what order they go in, and no matter what their ultimate goals are with coming to the playground in the first place.
Oh, I love that. It sounds like a choose your own adventure game.
Yeah, those are the best.
Exactly how you wanted to get through the game, and everyone's was different, but everybody had a different story to tell. It sounds pretty similar, kind of thing. How do you measure that kind of a thing, and is that even something that we should be worried about?
So one of the things that I kind of framed up in the talk and that I frame up as I do marketing is to have incremental metrics for each of the touch points and items. So a lot of people are so focused on clicks. Everything is a click through. It's how many people landed on this page? How many referrals did I get from social media? How many people opened the email? How many people clicked the link in the email? So much CTR. But there's actually a lot of ways that you can measure things for like brand affinity, brand awareness, brand lift, and those types of things. And so looking at, you know, having a lower bounce rate or time on site, looking at the stickiness of the content for video metrics. So how long did people watch? How long did they scrub? How many additional videos did they watch? Not just that one video. I would love for somebody to come if I had a video channel and just have them watch for 3 hours. But that means that they're not clicking away onto my site. But are you really going to tell me that somebody lands on the channel, clicks to the site, that's better than them staying and watching 3 hours worth of video? I also just saw fascinating campaign from the city of Vienna, actually. So taking a page from the consumer playbook, and it said, enjoy Vienna, not hashtag Vienna. And so they specifically were asking people, don't take photos, don't share them on social media, don't hashtag your vacation. And instead they said, come by the visitor center for the city, pick up an instant camera and only take 10 photos for the entire trip. And I was like, that's fascinating. How are they measuring the success of this campaign? Well, you could measure how many people came to the visitor center, how many people took and returned Instamax cameras, right? That's a fascinating thing. You could look at the revenues for all of the businesses that were featured on this website. So if we think beyond just a simple vanity metric of clicks or views, that's going to give us a much more holistic and impactful set of metrics compared to what most people are using today.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So think beyond it. And I love that, that you're looking at everything incrementally.
Yeah.
And so you're, you know, it's not looking at the entire story or the entire journey. It's what, you know, individual little journeys, and then how do they all add up? Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you've held a whole bunch of marketing roles and you've done a lot of different things, really fascinating things. Which ones do you like the most and what really fills you up? What gets you going?
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. I've had a really winding path in large part because I graduated into the recession. And so it was like, I'll take any marketing job, right? So I've gotten to do a lot of different things. The cool thing about that is twofold. The first is I got to really kind of discover where I fit and what I love. The second is I've had exposure to so many different things that I don't think in a narrow way. And I think that's part of the reason why the content playground, that concept speaks to me so much, because I don't think of, oh, we're just doing social media, or we're just doing email, or we're just doing events. It's like, no, all of those things go together. Those are all just touch points in the journey with humans, not just these don't just represent clicks. These represent actual people, and I can meet them in a variety of places. So for me, I think when I get to work on integrated campaigns and work in an integrated role, that's something that really fills me up. If there's, you know, more than two things need to happen, bring me in, because I will be able to connect all of those dots and say, you know what we could do? We can insert this other piece. And it's like, oh, well, I traditionally work on email marketing, so I wouldn't have thought about, you know, social media. Or, oh, I traditionally work, you know, on the creative team making banner ads or something like that. I wouldn't have thought about how we could frame this shot or how we could make cards for speakers at our events. And so having that broad view is something that for me, I love doing that. Also, because I've worked in a lot of different industries, I've been able to kind of find that humanity in each place, right? So that sense that you need to love the whole human, not just the persona or the buyer. Because I haven't always loved the product that I'm selling or the industry that I'm in, I've had to find a thing that I love. And it's always the person. It's like, these people are actually fascinating. I worked in aviation for a while and everyone's like, aviation, that's kind of random. And I was like, there's actually a lot of beauty in the airplane parts. We did a photo shoot and I was like, this is beautiful. These parts, they're so elegant. They're so intricate. They're so refined. Why would we make ugly ads or ugly booth art when we have such beautiful, you know, imagery that we could pull from right here in our products?
So just kind of shifting gears a little bit, you have a personal blog called Consciously Corporate.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that. Tell us about some of the surprises you had, whether, you know, positive or negative as a blogger, and what you've discovered just with the blog itself.
Sure. So I actually started that blog, I think back in 2009, because my husband was getting annoyed with me constantly coming home being like, I saw this today. And he's like, he's an engineer. So for him, he's like, I just don't understand why you're talking to me about marketing. And I'm like, well, because there's so many interesting things. He's like, you should really tell someone else about this. So I was like, you know, that's a good idea. Maybe I will. So I actually, when I started the blog, I called it Musing Marketing. And then, you know, being the generalist that I am, I started to notice a bunch of other business things. And then when I was doing my MBA, which is obviously a more kind of generic business degree, I was noticing a bunch of stuff about business. So that's how I ended up at Consciously Corporate. I recently added the tagline out of office as well, because I haven't been, you'll notice most of the posts are like, I'm writing in this other place or I'm speaking in this other place. So I am no longer posting all the time. I think that, one of the biggest surprises has been how many times a random subject has come up. And I'm like, I actually wrote a blog about that years ago. I was in a meeting with some of my colleagues at Atlassian recently, and something about like broccoli came up. And I was like, I have strong feelings about broccoli and how it's marketed. And all of my colleagues were like, well, okay, you have to send us this blog post. And I was basically talking about, this was years ago, the fact that all the seasonal vegetables on the menu are always broccoli. Why don't they just call them broccoli? And it's because broccoli has a bad rap, right? Like nobody's going to eat it. People say they don't like it. But in reality, we all eat broccoli because they keep selling the seasonal vegetables as broccoli, right? So some of the most random things that I feel that day, I felt very strongly about and I wrote about, the amount of times I've pulled those back up is really interesting. And then it's also been really interesting to go back and look at what I was thinking about and how I was thinking about marketing as a craft, how marketing in the world has changed, and the observations. Like, I mean, I've been writing that blog for a decade. And so to go back to 2009 or to go back to 2010, and when Twitter wasn't even a thing at that point. And so I have a few blog posts that's like, how to market on Twitter. And I'm like, oh, young Ashley, you didn't know anything, right? But it's because Twitter had just started. So there's some really interesting things to go back and look and to remind myself of, you know, when I wasn't experienced or when I wasn't jaded, or, oh man, I actually did this crazy thing at a previous job. I should try that in my current role. The other thing that's been interesting is that blog, it's built on WordPress and it is quite jankety at this point. I've done some like really interesting, if you go back to the archives and kind of see how it's evolved compared to what a lot of bloggers have today. I need to update it because I'm just looking at it. The layout, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so 2012, which was probably the last time I did a big layout shift. And even the color scheme has only been updated in the last couple of years. So it's hard. Like you think it's hard because you're at a company and so you have to get buy-in. And it's like, no, it's hard personally to decide on your brand and your tone and the layout and things. So it's been interesting to have that going in parallel with the rest of my career.
So you had taken all these different approaches from aviation and now currently what you're doing. I'd love for to hear the kinds of approaches you're taking throughout the years. You've shifted from, you know, how to tweet using this thing called Twitter to now multi-channel and omni-channel and how many things can we come up with? Transparent, you know, all the buzzwords. So,
right.
So what inspires you to take a different approach now, given all the different things we can do versus just tweeting?
Yeah. So I work for Atlassian, and so we actually have a really large marketing organization compared to where I've been at other places. So I've traditionally worked at much smaller companies, and so I didn't really have a lot of peers to bounce things off of. So it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because when you don't have any peers, it's like, well, I don't know, I read this on the internet, I can just try it. Sometimes that goes really well. Sometimes it doesn't. Obviously, when you do have peers, there's somebody who's probably done this. And so making sure that you're balancing those best practices, right? This whole show is about busting the best practices, but they became best practices for a reason in their time. And so finding out what other people know and getting their input is, I love having all of those peers because I work with some super smart people. I think for me, the biggest thing is trying to think about how I can apply those insights that maybe they gained from a specific channel or a specific campaign to the things that I'm working on that may be 100% different. So when I was in college, I actually read the book, The Medici Effect by Franz Johansson. And it's all about intersectional thinking. And that book, I recommend it to everybody because we hear about like convergent and divergent thinking. We hear about brainstorming tips, but that book really gave some examples of how that happens at scale and how in some cases you just need to force ideas together just to see if there's anything interesting there. And so having all of these other marketers or having other disciplines and saying, hey, look at what the aviation industry is doing, even though I no longer work there. Or I started my career at a solar startup. And again, you know, 10 years ago, solar was kind of not a thing. It was a thing in Germany, but that's about it. And now it's taking over, especially the Bay Area, because we have such great sun and such high energy rates. So looking at what other industries have done and seeing if there's something I can glean Obviously, my bio, I talk about being a, you know, singer, actor, and fitness fiend, right? So I get the chance to embody all of these other characters frequently because I perform often. And so just that sense of, I mean, I know who I am and what I value, but I frequently become these characters that are completely different and value different things. So when I come to marketing, it's not just me saying, oh, what do I want and what do I care about? Or even what do I think our customers or our users or our buyers want? It's really, okay, there is a human, they have a motivation. Let me figure out how I can tap into that. And just having that mindset really helps open up where I look for information, what I'm willing to try, and what I'm willing to kind of measure as a successful engagement whenever I think about moving forward.
How do you tap into that? What's one example of a way that you tap into understanding the human on the other end?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing, and this is almost like a little bit, I have the insider advantage because I'm married to an engineer. And so, for example, one of the big things we were talking about, a campaign, and I asked him, I was like, yeah, we were talking about this concept of like gaming and leveling up. And he, you know, totally blank face. And I was like, I was kind of thinking, what if the subject line was something about like getting a level 80 mage in World of Warcraft? And he looks at me and he's like, well, it really just, I mean, I don't know if that's good or not, because I need to know if it's the expansion pack or if it's not. I mean, because honestly, it could be. And I was like, that's what I needed. It doesn't totally matter if I'm right or wrong or if I've used the right language. I got you to pay attention to me because I babbled on for 5 or 10 minutes and you didn't care, because I hadn't spoken your language. And I found the one thing that made you turn around and be very, you know, concerned that I didn't know what I was talking about, right? So in this particular case, a lot of our audience, you know, our end users are developers. And so it's actually really handy when I have something, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just run this by my husband while we're doing stairs at the gym. And if he's dead silent, I have failed. If he says anything, I win, right? So it's almost a game. And he even knows every so often, he's like, are you testing a marketing thing on me? And I'm like, no, I'm just, I'm trying to test a marketing thing on you, right? So I honestly think having those relationships, and again, that openness to finding people that are not like you, and the conferences are great. Like I met somebody at Inbound that does insurance marketing. And I was like, this is fascinating. I have no idea about what you do or why you do it or who you're talking to at all. So being able to meet people, there was somebody else who owns a landscape business. And so we got to talking about, you know, all of the ways that their content needs to speak to landscapers. And again, that's something that I live in an apartment, so I don't think about it. So I really think just being open to talking to other people and viewing them as a whole human, that they have lives just like you and I do. There was actually a blog post that went around. It was called Sonder, the Marketer's Emotion. And I think it came from maybe Velocity Partners, but they were basically talking about the Dictionary of Infinite Sorrows. And Sonder is the realization that all of the people passing by have just as complex, you know, of a life and emotions and relationships as you have. And that to them, you are just a passerby. And the realization that like that's crazy to think about, you know, who are these people that you pass every day? And what does that mean when they're buying products or they're reading your blog posts or they're following you on social media? They have all the same struggles and triumphs that you have. And so I think just keeping that in the front of the mind really helps to frame up the human approach.
Wow. That just got my mind going on all the possibilities, because there are so many different dimensions in what you're talking about. It's like, it's kind of endless. It's a little bit of a galaxy of opportunities and you know, ways that people think. And so in B2B marketing, you have this wealth of knowledge I can tell from everything that you're building. And by the way, thank you for I think that was marketing knowledge, but it was also maybe a little bit of marriage counseling. So it was kind of cool the way that came out.
I do try, so you know, bring some work and life together there.
Yeah. So I would love to hear about a B2B brand perhaps that you admire and why you admire that brand.
Yeah. So I'll give you two. Obviously, the first is where I currently work. Otherwise, I wouldn't work here. So I work for Atlassian. And there's a couple of things that I really love that we're doing. We take a really unique approach to marketing. We've been on the front, the front trends of the flywheel model. So instead of thinking in that traditional, inbound, move people through a linear funnel, we've actually taken a much more holistic approach to say, hey, let's help you with Agile and DevOps. Let's help you with values and culture development. Let's help you bring the right practices, not just the right tools, into your organization. So on the team that I work on, we get the chance to talk a lot about collaboration, about personal productivity, about how to work better together. And so that has opened up some really fascinating research from a psychology standpoint, from a productivity standpoint for me personally. So obviously that's great. And then second, I've been really loving what IDEO has been talking about lately. So they're a consultancy that talks a lot about how to have impact in the world through design. And so they've been really up-leveling their content, talking about, how to unleash your creativity, how to think about changing your practices. In the past, it was all about efficiency. Today, it's all about problem solving. But when your entire culture and all of your processes and all of your incentives are built on efficiency, you're going to quash that creativity. So how do you span that gap? They've also been doing a lot of really interesting leadership and management content that's related to a lot of the problems that people are facing today with automation and, emotional IQ and those kinds of things. So IDEO, I think, and just, from an aesthetic perspective also, like, they've dialed in their brand, they've really honed their voice. So some of those marketing fundamentals that a content person like myself would like to see, everything is well written, it's on point, it's got a very distinct tone. So yeah, in addition to the work that I do at Atlassian, I'm loving the stuff that IDEO is putting out.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I used to track them quite a bit. I'm going to go check them out even more.
Yeah, go follow them on Twitter.
Yeah. Okay. I definitely will. I know one of the things that I admired about them was that they kept their size down so that no department could be larger than, I think it was like 49 people. Because once you grow past a certain amount, the creativity starts to become a little bit more compressed. And so yeah, they've always kept their little departments that were focused in a more compact way that way. So it was kind of cool that they did that. So last question I have for you is around the marketing best practices.
And yeah,
what's what you think an acceptable best practice is that you love, like, you just like really are endeared towards this today, that you can't wait to, or you can't wait to see a best practice, that God, please give us a best practice around this one thing. And maybe one that you just want to see go away.
Yeah.
Like this can't be here anymore.
Yeah. I'm loving that video is getting more play. I think that it's getting more recognition. I'm loving that there's more products that are starting to make it easier to, frame up a shot with decent lighting and to edit it really quickly, to put closed captions on it, to make those videos personal. I think that's great. I think we've still got a long way to go in terms of really making them more watchable and obviously on the content side, making sure that the content is engaging. But I'm loving all of the video, just like that face-to-face, human-to-human contact content, I think is so much better than like, oh my gosh, I have to read, 10,000 words. A best practice that I wish would just go away already, and I have been guilty of this in my past as well, is, if you're attending an event, going on social and being like, visit us at booth 123. Did you see us at booth 123? I love booth 123. It's like, no one cares about booth 123. What are you giving people that are following you that's unique about the event? Like, are you giving them a way to engage versus just stoking the FOMO that they're not at the event? Or just flooding your entire feed with, the booth. The ratio of people who follow you on social versus the people who are actually at the, event and looking to find you in person is really small. So for however many days out of the month or the year, you're just spamming people. So can we please stop doing that? Let's shift to think about how we can add value from the event to people, whether they're attending our sessions, whether they meet us at the booth, whether they're coming to us on social, whether they're getting a recap email from us. Like, how do we make that entire experience integrated instead of just shouting at them to come visit the booth when they're not actually at the event?
Oh, that's a great place to end. Stop shouting and start having more human to human. You just totally spoke to my soul. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you joining and lending some of your expertise here today.
Hi, everybody. Spencer here on the Lead Deal team. We want to thank Ashley Faust for being our guest on the show today. If you'd like to continue the conversation, tweet us at LeadTail or our guest at Ashley Faust.
If you want to see the full video interview series, you can find this episode and more at LeadTailTV.com. Please make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have ideas for the show? Do you know someone who would be great to be a guest? Drop us a line at studios@LeadTail.com. Thanks.